You're tuned to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Gavin Dahl. This year's legislative session wrapped up last week, and we're looking back on Local Motion this week and next week with several interviews. Today, you'll hear from Jeff Roberts from the nonprofit Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition based in Denver, who says it was a mixed bag for government transparency. Plus, Shannon Young from KGNU in Boulder interviews Elliot Goldbaum of the Colorado Fiscal Institute about the impacts of a tax fairness for Coloradans package on families. Lots to learn. Stay tuned. Jeff Roberts, the executive director of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition. Thanks for joining me, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
For listeners unfamiliar, what's the mission of the CFOIC, and what are some of the ways your own work supports your nonprofit's members?
So the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition is a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been around since 1987, and our mission is to educate Coloradans and specifically also the journalism community in Colorado about their rights under the open government laws. So those are the public records laws in Colorado, the open meetings law, court access. And we also just generally advocate for more government transparency. Our members include both citizens and citizens groups, but also news organizations throughout the state. So we help news organizations obtain records when they're having problems, fighting back wrongful denials, things like that, trying to get the laws improved. And opposing efforts to make the laws less transparent.
In terms of, you know, seeking to influence the legislative process, who are CFOIC's key partners in general? I'm thinking the Press Association and the Broadcasters Association. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So the Colorado Press Association, the Colorado Broadcasters Association, we've worked with other organizations, the ACLU of Colorado. We've worked with Common Cause. We've worked with the Independence Institute. So various organizations that all have government transparency in mind.
And across the political spectrum. Just want to say for full disclosure, KVNF is a member of the CBA, the Broadcaster Association, and CFOIC. My guest is Jeff Roberts, the director of the Freedom of Information Coalition. You wrote a wrap-up of Colorado's legislative session last week. It sounds like 2021 was a mixed bag for government transparency. Let's start with what you call the disappointing news. There's one bill in particular, House Bill 1051, that press groups strongly opposed. It passed the House and Senate, and then Governor Polis let the bill become law without his signature. Initially, the bill was introduced in response to some court rulings. Tell us what this one's all about, please, Jeff.
Yeah, so House Bill 1051, as you said, was introduced in response to a couple of district court rulings that said that public bodies, so city councils, county commissions, the University of Colorado Regents, could name just, the court ruling said that they needed to name more than one finalist for chief executive officer position. So we're talking about superintendents of schools, city managers, the University of Colorado presidency. And that's the case that actually has now gone up to the Colorado Court of Appeals and may go to the Colorado Supreme Court. There was a case that the Boulder Daily Camera filed against the CU Regents related to their naming of just one finalist for the president's job that went to Mark Kennedy in 2019. The newspaper and our organization and others think that the public is entitled to know who was seriously considered for these jobs. That's the way the law has been interpreted for many, many years, that when it comes down to the finalists, the final three or so that really are considered for these jobs, that those names should be made public and that their applications should be made public. That's how the law has been interpreted. That's how the district courts interpreted the law. The Court of Appeals in a 2-1 ruling said the opposite in the CU case. The legislature came back and decided that just one finalist is okay, which we think was not the transparent way to go.
The bill's proponents claim a public process makes hiring pools weaker, but didn't the CFOIC find countless examples of jurisdictions disclosing multiple finalists effectively?
Right. So we thought that if this change was going to be made, there should be a reason to make this change, that it actually has made it more difficult to find really good candidates for these chief executive officer positions. But we found, you know, just recently, you know, 35 examples of jurisdictions that disclosed multiple finalists as the law said they were supposed to do. So, you know, what was the problem that needed fixing?
And who are the big influences at the Capitol that were in favor of this bill? I mean, would that be like the Municipal League or the university systems?
Yeah. So, you know, those organizations, you know, any association that represents government, you know, so the Municipal League, the school boards, the universities wanted the ability to do this. We asked the governor after this bill was passed, we asked the governor to veto it. And he he did something which is kind of rare, letting the bill become law without his signature. He put out a letter saying,
"What did Polis say about that? About letting it become law without signing that? Like you said, that's not that common.
It's not common. You know, we wrote a letter. I spoke to someone on his staff. I think we made a good argument, and he cited our arguments in his letter, basically saying that." He kind of agreed with both sides on this, but he thought it was the best practice for governments, public bodies to have multiple finalists. Apparently, he wasn't willing to have the law say that anymore.
You're tuned to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Gavin Dahl speaking with Jeff Roberts, the executive director of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition. Tell us about what you call some positive developments from the 2021 legislative session. Did legislators achieve progress on police accountability with some of the last-minute amendments to their bills, in your view?
Yes, I think so. This is also one of our areas of focus, police transparency. A couple of years ago, we worked with the ACLU on a bill, House Bill 1119 in 2019, that opened for the first time records on completed police internal affairs investigations. There was a study that the University of Denver Law School did a couple years before that showed that practically all police agencies in Colorado were not willing to release these records on allegations of misconduct involving police officers. Obviously, that's a huge issue nationwide. Police accountability and transparency, but we got the legislature to pass this bill. I realized after talking to many reporters who started asking for these files that the law was somewhat limited. The way it was worded, it required you to ask for the records on a specific identifiable incident of alleged misconduct involving an officer and a member of the public. Well, so when a reporter asked for, you know, all the disciplinary records on Officer X, they were, you know, the agency was able to withhold those. Now, a few will provide them. The Denver Department of Public Safety has been doing that for a long time in response to requests. But in many other agencies, they haven't done that. So one of the things that happened actually on the very last day of the legislative session in a very sweeping police accountability bill that was a follow-up to one from 2020, is that they just removed the word specific identifiable from before incident. So we'll see if this helps open up some more of those records. You know, I think about an officer like the officer in Minneapolis who was convicted in the death of George Floyd. You know, if you wanted to request the disciplinary history of an officer like that, I think you should be able to do that and not have the law be so specific that you have to know about the incident, you know, in order to make that request. So hopefully this will open up more of those records.
Yeah, Jeff, you quoted a Denver Post reporter, "You don't know what you don't know." And so that hopefully will lead to fewer rejections of these kind of requests from sheriff's offices and police departments. What did the legislature change in terms of body camera footage?
If you remember in 2020, there was a very wide-ranging police accountability and transparency bill. It did lots of things. One of the things that it did is say that body cam footage needs to be released within a set period of time, 21 days or 45 days, if they can show that it's still being used in an investigation. The way the law has been is that it just gives the agency a whole lot of discretion to withhold that footage if they determine that release would be contrary to the public interest. So this bill from last year set this time period, but it wasn't supposed to go into effect until 2023. And now with this latest bill, which is on Governor Polis's desk right now, if he signs that bill, this provision goes into effect upon his signature.
And can you talk specifically about the radio encryption issue, please, Jeff?
Yeah, and that's also in this bill. So another interesting aspect for police transparency and accountability. This is a trend among police agencies in Colorado and actually in many other parts of the country where they're encrypting all of their radio communications, all of their scanner traffic. And what that means for police reporters is that it's very difficult for them to know what's happening right now. And it's so in Denver, in Aurora, in some other cities that have done this, the police reporter has no access to information in real time. That means you don't know where to send your crew or your reporter to the scene to go ask questions, to follow up. You don't know if something's happening that you need to alert your readers or your viewers now that something hazardous might be going on. You have to rely completely on the agency to tell you and, you know, when they decide to tell you. So, or maybe they don't. So it's a problem for reporters. There are a lot of people in the public who listen to scanners as well. And so there have been bills introduced the last 3-4 years that haven't gone anywhere in the legislature to address this issue. But there's a provision in this police accountability bill. Once again, if it's signed by Governor Polis, it will require these agencies to have a policy for allowing news media access to unencrypted transmissions. Now, we'll see how this works because several agencies that have done this, like Denver, there have been attempts to have agreements with news media that have been unsuccessful. And so this provision in the new law, assuming it becomes law, really doesn't define what those provisions should be. It allows the agencies to have reasonable restrictions on the use of their equipment. But there have been sticking points in attempts to have these agreements in the past, like the city of Denver wants the news organizations to indemnify the city when if anything resulting from the use of these unencrypted radios leads to a lawsuit against the city. Well, the news organizations haven't been willing to agree to that. So, this hopefully will at least open the negotiations a bit again and maybe lead to some agreements.
And lastly, what did lawmakers do about public disclosure of the names of law enforcement officers with criminal convictions, histories of lying, excessive force incidents, or other credibility problems?
This is concerning what are called Brady lists. And Brady lists, that's named for a 1963 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that said that prosecutors can't withhold evidence that is favorable to a defendant. And that might include a police officer who wasn't credible, who might have lied on the stand or had a history of not being credible. And so there has been no consistency with DA's offices in Colorado regarding their public release of these lists, these Brady lists of officers with known credibility issues. And this bill that is also on the governor's desk, Senate Bill 174, would create a standardized amount of information that is required to be reported to the DA's office about these officers, and it also has the state creating a database of the officers in a searchable format that would be published on its website. So even though right now some DA's offices release these lists to the public and some do not, once this becomes a law and they find money to build this database, these names will be public.
Jeff Roberts, Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, online at coloradofoic.org. We just have a few minutes left. Let me ask you to summarize three other bills that passed this year. First, the sealing of lower-level criminal records, House Bill 1214, which passed with bipartisan support. The aim is to give people second chances, for example, making it automatic that public access to some arrest records is closed off when no criminal charges were ever filed. This one passed with bipartisan support. I already said that. Why did some journalists ask lawmakers to reconsider this one?
Yeah, so this is a tough one. I mean, it is very understandable why the legislature would want to do something about collateral consequences for, you know, people who with criminal records. You know, we're talking about their ability to get housing and jobs sometimes, and that's the aim of House Bill 1214 and some other legislation that has been passed the last few years. But we're also talking about sealing criminal records that could be useful for examining how the criminal justice system works. And sometimes it's looking at an individual's record if they're running for office, you know, things like that. And so there was an effort, at least by the Press Association, some journalists who testified on behalf of the Press Association, to at least try to let legislators know about this other aspect of what they were doing, that by closing off more criminal records, records, that you also might close off the ability of some people, researchers, journalists, to examine the criminal justice system in such a way that can expose systemic problems with the system, racism, misconduct, things like that. And so it really, you know, there's another side to this. Like I said, it's a very difficult issue where on one hand you want to support efforts to help people rebuild their lives. On the other hand, there's another way, aspect of this, another way to look at it.
Another one that's interesting in terms of free speech is a bill that prohibits homeowners associations from banning signs and flags based on the message. This one was HB 1310. According to the Denver Post, there are over 8,000 HOAs in the state, with more than half the population living under HOA governance. What controls do HOAs still have?
This one's interesting because, you know, a lot of people want to put flags or in their yards or signs, you know, for various causes and things like that in their lines, but on their lawns. If you live in a homeowners association, as many people in Colorado do, some of these homeowners associations have restricted what can be put on people's lawns. And so there have been lots of disagreements about that. A lot of people, getting upset at being told, no, you can't have that Black Lives Matter sign on your front lawn or that flag or whatever. And so this bill, House Bill 1310, now says that they cannot They cannot tell you not to have that flag or sign in your yard based on the content or the message of that sign. What they can still do is say that you can, you know, you can't have a sign that's, you know, gigantic, a billboard, you know, size sign or something like that, you know, or you can't have probably 50 of them or something, you know, that doesn't have to do with the content of the message, but more, you know, something about how it looks. It's more regulating that type of thing.
And lastly, House Bill 1103 creates an online media literacy resource for public schools in the state. This bill was criticized by many Republicans as a governmental intrusion because, God forbid, students think more critically about the news they consume. But I was surprised to learn the bill doesn't actually require districts or charter schools to incorporate any of the materials into their curriculum. Did the CFOIC take a position on this one?
We did not take a position on it, but we are certainly in favor of anything that gets people and young people, maybe in particular, really anybody, to think more critically about the media that they consume or see, you know, on the internet, on their social media, that type of thing. We just, you know, it is so important that people not just take everything at face value and to know how to really look into whether it has any credibility or not, any truth behind it. And so, you know, I think it's a good thing to have these resources there for schools to use. It became a very, very political discussion in the legislature. And so, you know, this might have been the way to get this passed, you know, to say that it is voluntary, this resource bank. It will be there. It's to be created by the Department of Education and maintained by them. And the public, if they disagree with something in there, can make recommendations to have, you know, items removed or items added to it. And we're just going to have to see how this is used over time.
That's Jeff Roberts, Executive Director of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition online at coloradofoic.org. Thanks for speaking with KVNF.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Local Motion. I'm Gavin Dahl. One measure passed by the legislature that will financially benefit families with children and owners of small businesses is in fact a combination of two bills known together as the Tax Fairness for Coloradans package. KGNU's Shannon Young sends along this interview.
The Colorado legislature passed bills this session amounting to the state's most significant tax reform in a decade. Joining me to discuss the details is Elliot Goldbaum of the Colorado Fiscal Institute. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
First, walk us through what measures were passed and what they would do.
Well, there were a few bills related to taxes that passed, and I want to focus on a couple of them. The big ones that passed were House Bill 1311 and House Bill 1312, which were collectively the Tax Fairness for Coloradans package. And what we saw with that was legislation that recognized that workers and families are what really powers Colorado's economy and that they should have a fairer tax code. In that legislation, lawmakers more than doubled the state earned income tax credit, which boosts incomes for low-wage workers. They also funded, finally, the state child tax credit, which has been on the books for about 7 or 8 years now, but has never been funded by the legislature. Both of those credits give Coloradans a percentage of dollars that is related to federal tax credits that have similar names. Both of those tax credits have been associated with a laundry list of positive benefits for recipients like better health, kids doing better in school. Research has also shown that they benefit local economies too. Those bills included also a dramatic increase in the amount of personal property that's exempt from taxes for small businesses and created a new tax incentive for employee-owned businesses. So with those bills, what the legislature was really doing was saying small businesses, workers, families are really the people who we should be doing a better job of making our tax code fair for.
So the main beneficiaries would be families with children and owners of small businesses. Can you convert this into dollars and cents? Like, how much can a family with, say, two kids count on?
You know, it really is hard to say because it's a lot of it is based on people's incomes and the amount of the federal credit that this is related to. But, you know, a few hundred bucks for families. And, you know, if you have kids under six and you're a low wage worker, then this is definitely going to benefit you.
Is that a few hundred bucks annually or each month?
A few hundred bucks a year in addition to the dollars that they're getting from the federal tax credits.
Right. And so the federal government is going to start a program that refunds in monthly increments the child tax credit?
Correct. So under the federal legislation that was passed earlier this year, there was a dramatic increase in the child tax credit. And that is going to include monthly payments potentially for families that qualify for the child tax credit. The Colorado child tax credit, the state level child tax credit, does not operate in that way. This would just be a refund that people would get in addition to money that they're already getting on their federal and state tax returns, their state tax returns, excuse me.
And at the state level, where is the money coming from to fund this tax reform?
Good question. So the way that the lawmakers paid for it was by closing loopholes that state analyses from the Department of Revenue and the Office of the State Auditor showed weren't growing the economy, creating jobs, creating a more equitable economy, or broadly benefiting the state. And if folks are really interested, there's links to those reports that can show you all of the ways that they determined whether those tax credits and exemptions and deductions, all of those that they determined weren't working. They also were targeted at really big corporations and very high income earners. So by closing those loopholes, lawmakers were able to fund those tax credits and other tax provisions that were targeted more at working families and small businesses.
And you mentioned earlier that the child tax credit at a state level, that's been something that's been that proponents have been trying to get through for several years now. Did the pandemic kind of eventually, tip the scales on this, or to what do you attribute it finally going through?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think that a big reason is because, Colorado, we've not been able to fund that in the past. I think that by those state analyses coming in the last few years, and Colorado Fiscal Institute was one group that was definitely pushing for those state analyses because we hear a lot about these various tax credits and deductions, what we call tax expenditures, spending money through the tax code. And we thought it would be really important for taxpayers and lawmakers to know whether those are working the way that lawmakers intended. And when those state analyses that have been coming in from over the last year or so started to show which ones could potentially be closed, that would be seen as something that everybody can get behind because nobody wants to be wasting money through the tax code, just like nobody wants to be wasting money that's being spent in the budget either. So I think that those analyses really did power it. I think that there's also been, in part due maybe to the pandemic, but I think it's been a long time coming, more of an emphasis on just how unequal our tax code is and how unequal incomes are in our country. And I think that there's been more of a willingness among lawmakers to embrace tax reform that puts workers and families before big corporations and the wealthy.
And these bills haven't yet been signed into law. Is it reasonable to expect that they will be? And if it is, how soon can families and small business owners start benefiting from them?
The governor has been a strong supporter of these bills, and we are expecting that he will sign them. And in terms of when they start to take effect, they won't take effect until tax year 2022, so next year's tax year. But the long-term permanent nature of these tax laws is really important. This is not a COVID relief bill, that's where we're hoping that we can get money into the hands of people immediately. These are long-term changes that we hope will make our economy fairer for years, decades to come.
Elliot Goldbaum of the Colorado Fiscal Institute, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Shannon.
You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. All of our archives are on the web at kvnf.org. Thanks for supporting independent public media. I'm Gavin Dahl.